Hey, I'm Tom, that's Mike, and by popular demand, and I'm not exaggerating, like, the ridiculous amount of feedback we've gotten about this guy is awesome, Tom Richards is on the line.
Hey, Tommy, what's up, buddy?
Yo, what's going on?
Not a whole lot. And we have you on just because Mike told me you got stories to tell, and I love hearing stories. So we're going to tell some stories tonight. I believe we're going to talk about the ROH I pay-per-view tomorrow. I believe you told Mike you wanted to talk about that. But before we get into anything else, I've gotten asked this twice by Georgie Boy in the CZW fans board, so I kind of have to ask you this. How bad does that Mikey kid suck at 2CW? I don't get the question either.
Wait, what was the question again?
How bad does that Mikey kid suck at 2CW?
I guess they mean the kid from Binghamton that was in the main event.
I guess. That's George Dick really exactly.
His name was like Mikey something. He's green as can be, you know, but he's over with the crowd, and if he draws a lot of people in because he's a hometown guy, I don't blame them for using him like they do, but I don't know. He sucks pretty bad, but he does a lot of crazy bumps, so he's going to end up crippled, you know? But, yeah.
Who that would be.
You know, one of them green kids that just takes a lot of silly bumps to get over with the crowd when he's not really ready and shouldn't be doing that and should just be doing basics, but he's not.
Yeah.
But they love him up there.
Wow.
So, yeah,
I'm trying to see who this is. I'm going to actually look on the 2Series website when we're done recording, but I guess Tom Green wanted me to kind of tell the story here. I guess I go to the ECW Arena pretty much every month or so with Tom here. You go to all this stuff, and Tom's been actually going to these shows for almost, you know, 20 years now, right? Isn't it coming up? So you have a lot of stories. I know Valentine's Day was coming up too, and there's actually, you know, we wanted to talk about ECW, but Dean, I guess we're kind of related to Valentine's Day a little bit, you know, not too far back. I want you to tell the story about My Bloody Valentine when you went to the XPW show on Valentine's Day, like during in the blizzard or something like that. I think that was one of like the more infamous nights in XPW's very infamous history, you know. So what do you remember about that night? Because I remember it being a... You know,
XPW was a great learning experience because they showed up in Philly in August or whatever year it was they came, and they had like a really big crowd, at least 800 people or more. The place was pretty packed in Philly at the arena, and they put on a pretty good show. And being XPW, they managed to get Light Tubes Band in Philadelphia on their first night in. They did good. It was a good show. They had a good turnout. And from that point forward, every month, they drew less people and less people until we got to February of the, which was what, like 6 months later from August. And, they were down to one row of fans around the ring. And that's about it. Like maybe 80 people or so. And they tried to do a, double shot where they said they were going to run Friday and Saturday night. And after drawing maybe 80 people on Friday night, they canceled the Saturday night show, blaming a blizzard hitting town. But at the same time, 3PW was running the next night with their anniversary show with like a loaded lineup at the Electric Factory, and they drew like maybe their biggest crowd ever during this so-called blizzard.
By the way, if Leonard Chikar is listening to this, I suggest booking the Electric Factory maybe for a featured Chikar event, because I think that would be an awesome venue. And I know you agree there. Tom Richards, I don't know about you, Tom Green, if you've seen it before.
I'm thinking about the Club 1401 that CCW ran once, where Trent Acid did the shoot run-in or whatever happened. That's not the same building, I know, but...
No, I don't even know what that building is. Electric Factory, it's a cool atmosphere. I'm guessing the rent's probably really expensive on that place.
Yeah, that's probably why, I mean...
And probably hard as hell to get on the weekend, would be my guess, with all the national acts that play there.
Yeah, wishful thinking, obviously. But ECW, I guess, is like the main thing that we wanted to talk about. And I know, Tom Green, you had like a list, I guess, you kind of made up of things people kind of put together. So
yeah, we have like a ton of listener questions. I know we're not going to get to all of them because I kind of wanted to mix. I want to mix these in because I know Mike and you have stories from the arena, and Mike has told me plenty of stories that you told him. That I want to get to that stuff as well as this. There's someone on the CZW fans board named RHR who wants to know your thoughts on Hunter Q Robbins.
Yeah, Hunter Q Robbins. He was a manager there in like 93 when it first started. Black guy. I didn't care for him at all.
Like, wait, he was black?
Nothing. Yeah.
What? I thought he was like a, just really tan. Like he had that horrible maybe, accent.
Unless he was Puerto Rican or Mexican or something.
Well, he had like this really horrible British accent that like nobody from Europe would actually speak with, but I didn't know he was right? black.
I never really cared for his work at all. But what I do know is a good friend of mine is wrestling on the indie scene. And Hunter went on to do shows for, like, years and years and years. He may even still be promoting shows to this day, like little crap shows in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware area. Because my buddy has worked for him for years, and he actually takes care of him pretty good. So I guess he's a decent promoter, I guess.
As long as...
I have no idea what the name of his shows are, where he runs or whatnot, but... That's what he was doing instead of managing, I guess.
Well, hopefully this encourages him to start running under the Hunter Q Robbins Wrestling Federation so people can find him. But also,
I think he's, not to interrupt, I think he's in that Tri-State Alliance, Tom, right? Isn't he?
I don't know.
I don't know. We're going to have to do investigating, on the next show we'll...
Isn't the guy that's booking the Tri-State group also booking ECWA now? Like the dude that took over for Kettner, I'm almost positive, books for Tri-State. So, Tom, this being completely natural, we weren't interrupted at all. You know, nobody's phone died or anything, not at all. Any memories of... Yeah, never, ever happened. Any memories of major, you know, fuck-ups or botches or what have you, i.e., as this person put, J.T. Smith headbutting the concrete, and then he included a GIF file of J.T. Smith doing a dive over the top rope against what looks to be Hack Myers.
That was sick. I remember that. That was August of 95. J.T. Smith went to do a dive, like a dive over the top or in between the top and second rope and caught his knee pads on the ropes, and this went header straight first to the concrete floor. Had like the biggest one, a big grotesque like hematomas on his head when he got up. Yeah, it was bad. That was like the opening match of the night. But the one I was thinking of today, it never gets talked about, and I don't even know who the guy is, but like in the summer of 96, Shane Douglas brought in a guy. It was like a big fat guy that looked kind of like an Abdul the Butcher type guy. And he did a run-in in the middle of a Shane Douglas match in 96 in the summer and tried to dive off the top rope, fell off the top rope into the ring and broke his leg. And it was like one of them sick breaks where you hear the snap of the leg and like everybody like oohed and aahed in the crowd. And it was never shown on TV, never mentioned. I don't think he had a name because like that was his first run-in, you know. Disappeared, was never brought back, never heard of again, and I never knew who it was.
That's quite the way to make an entrance there to the ECW.
We're going to have to find out who that is, I guess. So, and one of the threads that we posted.
I never knew all these years, you know. Never found out who it was.
Yeah.
And Paul never brought him back after that great introduction, you know.
I mean, how couldn't you? I mean, it sounds like the guy was a star, stud. So anyway,
obviously they had plans for him because they brought him in as part, like in as like part of an angle type deal. They definitely had plans for him with a push, you know. They do a run in the middle of a match like that.
Fair. One question I wanted to ask real quick, and we can kind of go through, you know, the entire night. I guess we can go through the entire backstory, but the night that Kimono Wanalea danced atop the ECW arena. Tom, were you there for that night? And I guess, like, kind of, like, go back and, like, you know, go back and, like, talk about, like, what happened, like, you know, surrounding, I guess, what led up to the dancing atop the ECW arena.
I was there, front row, June or July of 96. Real hot night. ECW arena, Asylum arena, Alam arena, no matter what the name of the arena, in the summer, that place is just a heat box. And this was one of the nights the humidity was high, and ECW always had a reputation for terrible rings. And the ring they were using this night kept breaking. And they fixed it, it would break again. They fixed it, and like twice it broke really bad. And so they had to stop the show, and they were trying to fix it. You could see Paul Lee, like, up on the old stage, just, like, flipping out, you know. And suddenly they start clearing out the whole stage area where, like, they were filming a hard camera at the time. And, like, everyone's thinking, what's going on? Like, a lot of people are talking, thinking they're going to wrestle the match up there since the rings broke, you know. And all of a sudden music hits, and out came Kimona, and she did her strip routine up there on the top stage for the whole crowd to see. And the funny part is, right next to me, my best friend at the time, Mike, was sitting right next to me, not this Mike. And he was gone the whole time. I'm thinking, where is he? Where is he, you know? And I go looking around. I go outside, and he's standing outside. I go, yo, tell me you weren't out here the whole time. And he's like, hey, I went to the car. I figured nothing's going on. Why? What did I miss? And I told him about Kimona stripping, and he never believed me. He thought I was bullshitting. I was ripping him the whole time, you know? And until a couple months later when they started advertising the VHS tape on their TV show for it.
and they never stopped.
And they continued to do so for like the next 6 years. Yeah, that's just one of the nights. And then wasn't that basically, what was it, RVD and Sabu basically wrestling?
Yeah, it was the main event. And sure enough, soon they started that match, the ring broke again.
Yeah, I was going to say, it wasn't a very good match.
Fighting
was it?
In the crowd. What?
I said, what was it, a good match, or was it just people were just out of it?
No, it was they couldn't do much in the ring because, like, the ring ropes are all sagging and stuff, so most of the match was, like, brawling in the crowd. And it was probably, like, I don't want to say worst of all their series of matches, because their matches at the time were really groundbreaking and good, you know, and crazy. And that one was probably my least favorite of all of their original series from 96.
Now, I had a question here real quick, going back to the J.T. Smith deal I forgot to ask earlier. Because there's a lot of people from, like, Gabe Sapolsky to the guys that used to work on, like, PW Insider and do One Wrestling and now do PW Insider, like Dave Shear and such, who swear up and down J.T. Smith was, like, this amazing worker who, just because he got hurt really bad and his family didn't want him to work anymore, that's the reason why he didn't blow up. Is that, you think that's truth, or you think that's more people just remembering back a little too fondly?
It's probably a little bit of both. Like, he was certainly a solid worker, but I don't think he was the type of guy that was ever going to get over to, like, anything, even, like, an ECW level. But he was certainly, you know, a good hand to have underneath on the undercard, and Paulie gave him the comedy gimmick, and he made it work, so... I don't think he would have ever been anything more than just the guy in the undercard, you know?
Yeah, it just always seemed to me, like, looking back, because, again, I didn't watch a whole lot of ECW when it was around. The first, like, ECW TV show I saw was in 1999, so I'm not exactly a child of the revolution, so to speak. But,
right.
But, no, just from what I saw J.T. Smith, it always seemed like these people were kind of full of it. I mean, he was good for Philadelphia, but, you know, beyond that, I don't know if he would have...
Yeah, he was over big in Philly because he was from Philly, and I think he worked at Todd Gordon's pawn shop and all that. But outside of Philly, I don't think he would have ever been really anything, you know.
Yeah.
But definitely a solid worker, but nothing spectacular.
Now, by the way, have you ever been inside that pawn shop?
No, I don't even know where it's at.
people make it out like it's right next door. And yet,
no, certainly not, because I've never been to it. I don't even know where it's at.
We should make note of this real quick. What is actually next door is Foreman Mills, and it's been there for years, and it's actually closing. And poor Tom Richards' heart was broken when I broke this news to him that Foreman Mills was going to be closing. Because I guess, you know, for many years, I mean, you'd hear stories about people going to Foreman Mills before these stubby shows back in the day. Right.
Yeah, from the very first time I went to ECW back in April 95, there's a Foreman Mills outlet right next door. It sells amazingly good clothes, cheap. All kinds of great sports team clothes, all kinds of jeans, designer clothes, and it's all like dirt cheap prices. And they're closing after all this
time. I know. I'm very upset.
It kind of stinks.
Well, yeah, so, I was just going to say that their final day should be called Status Update Close. Seriously, fuck you, DJ Hyde. Anyway, so Alan Forel has an interesting a word association game he wants us to play. He has three words here, and he wants me to say them to you one at a time, and he just wants the first story that comes to your head when you hear these. The first one being drugs. He wants a good drug story.
See, I don't really do any other drugs but weed, and I stay away from all that stuff. But at the Travel Lodge, you know, everything in the world was going on. And we would go down there for people that know drug terminology. We would take like an ounce of weed down on a Saturday and come back Sunday afternoon with absolutely nothing left. So these people that smoke weed know how much that is to go through in one night. And one afternoon in Philadelphia,
oh my God.
Wrestlers and wrestling fans.
I'm guessing the second one's also going to lead us back to the Travel Lodge. I not necessarily if you've ever partaken in any of this, but if you've ever heard any wacky stories of wrestlers at the Travel Lodge and, you know, their sexual escapades, I'll put it delicately. Alan just put sex. He wants good sex stories out of our show. It's kind of creepy, but I love you, Alan.
Well, certainly there was a bunch of ring rats at ECW, like any wrestling territory or any wrestling promotion. They had their share that were always around. And at the Travel Lodge, you'd always see the wrestlers with hot chicks coming and going. It would always be the same hot chicks with two, like, different wrestlers every show. Like, they were just, you know, taking turns. But it all certainly was going on and definitely existed there.
And the final one, which hopefully includes both drugs and sex, would be Axel Rotten.
I have two stories, actually. Well, one about sex. Well, one, not Axel Rotten sex, but one about sex.
Oh, I'm disappointed.
Axel Rotten was a super cool guy. I was never a big fan of Axel Rotten in the ring, really. But really cool dude, like, outside the ring to meet and like, always treated the fans really cool in the ECW days. And one story I remember was we were sitting in the and like what we would do is we'd go down every month to Travel Lodge and get a room. And basically what ECW did is they would make all the wrestlers go back to the Travel Lodge after the show, and they rented out the top floor suite of the Travel Lodge because it was like a tower hotel, and like the top floor is a suite. And they went around the top suite, and that's where they cut all the promos for their TV for all the weeks. So all the wrestlers, whether they were local or being flown in, would all have to go back to the Travel Lodge and cut all their promos for TV. Thus, the Travel Lodge became Party Central, where just the whole hotel was just booked to wrestlers' rooms and wrestling fans from first floor up to the top floor. And the whole lobby was just, they probably had more fans in the lobby on a monthly basis than CZW draws on a monthly basis in the arena now.
Hey-o.
You know? Like, after a while, that's what it turned into with the Travel Lodge. It was just a big party in the lobby. And everybody having rooms. And anyway, one night we're just sitting in the room, and there's a knock on the door. Like, we open the door, and it's Axel Rotten. And he's like, all right, where's the drugs? Like, drugs. He's like, yeah. He's like, come on, pull out the coke, pull out the crack. Let's do some stuff here. They're like, yo, we don't have nothing. He goes, well, I smell weed. I know you got weed, so pack a goddamn bowl. And he sits down on the bed and smoked weed with us for an hour straight. Bullshit. And that's my actual rotten story.
Oh, good old Axel. And I think Mike's rolling one up right now.
No. I wasn't.
Did you say you had a second story, or?
Getting back to the ECW ring rats. I remember the one night, it was a weird night because we actually didn't have a room booked at the Travel Lodge. But one of the ring rats that you'd see there all the time, I see my one buddy's talking to her all night, and he comes over. He's like, yo, you want to stay tonight? And, like, we were all like, yeah, whatever. Turns out she has, like, this real nice room at the downtown Doubletree Hotel in Philly. So we all, so it's like me and my buddy, two of our friends, and this ECW ring rat, we go down to this hotel, and we're like all drunk and destroyed and annihilated. And, we all start drinking in the room. And, the next thing I remember is waking up, and there's a ring rat doing my buddy in the middle of the room on the bed with everyone just sitting around drinking and smoking, and everyone's giving them triple threat symbol to banging a chick in the middle of the hotel room with a bunch of wrestling fans getting stoned and drunk around. Crazy.
I'm so glad you guys are alive after all of this. Like, wow. Wow. And
yeah.
The Travelodge just sounds like the most legendary place ever between, you know, your stories and, you know, various shoot interviews that other ECW guys have done. Honestly, CZW sounds like it'd be a million times better if they just did their shows at the Travelodge.
Right? I couldn't imagine if you, like, walked in there just stopping in to get a room, you know? Like, because it's, like, not far away from, like, the set and, like, the arena area. So, like, maybe you're coming in and decide to get a cheap room somewhere, and you walk into the debauchery going on in that place. It's had to be insane to see. You know?
Yeah.
Just the ECW crew of wrestlers themselves in this hotel lobby, you know, without a couple hundred wrestling fans there, too. Just think of the picture of that in your head, exactly how you would picture it, you know? Exactly.
I'm still trying to picture the story of the girl doing your friend and the triple threat signs all going around. Oh, yeah. Goodness.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know if we have any more, you know, listener questions that people posted on the board, but, like, if Tom has any, if you have, like, any other general Travelodge stories, I mean, I'm sure we'll be doing a lot of these shows, and I'm sure there's more coming or whatever, but is there anyone maybe not involving Axelrod, you know, with the debauchery things going on in stairwells or whatever, you know, going on that you kind of remember?
It was just like, there's nothing like in particular, but it was just like every floor there was stuff going on, because like I said, it was just all wrestlers or wrestling fans booked in every room. So like every floor, the hotel lobby, it was just like there was stuff going on everywhere. There's wrestlers everywhere. It got to the point where wrestlers would come to the Travelodge that weren't even booked on ECW shows. You know, I actually seen Sabu there before I see him in ECW. Because my very first show was three-way dance where he no-showed the New Japan and got fired. He started coming to Travelodge hanging out when he wasn't even working for ECW and was doing Dennis Caruso's show. I remember Dan Severn hanging out there. Like, all these different guys that didn't even work for ECW would be there.
Dan Severn.
I kind of want to see someone write a movie, like kind of like The Hangover, but about the Travelodge with Dan Severn, right? Like Zach Galifianakis.
That building still exists too. I mean, like, they didn't tear it down. I mean, it's a different name. It's not the Travelodge anymore. I think it's
It's definitely not the Travelodge. It's still there. It's something.
Yeah, because it's right by. If people are kind of familiar with Philadelphia, it's right around where the Penrose Diner is, right off. You know, not too
Penrose
far.
Penrose Diner is right across the street. Which, for all the stories you hear about the Oregon Diner, Penrose Diner was just as great because everyone would go over there to eat, and it'd be like nonstop with wrestlers and wrestling fans in the Penrose Diner too, right on Penrose. That all lasted for about a year or so, and I guess Travelodge owners and management finally had enough and pulled the plug.
They had enough.
But it lasted for at least a year, if not more, which is pretty crazy considering they would run like every third Saturday.
That's right. I was going to say, it must have been like to the point where it probably wasn't worth the money that they were getting for everyone coming in there, probably having to repair everything, probably. But
probably not. I can imagine how the rooms would get destroyed, you know? Because I just know what we would do to our room. We were just stupid kids, you know? But, like, just the money that had to be going. And the rooms were cheap at the time, too. And the place was a really nice hotel. It wasn't, like, a seedy, cheap place, you know? And, like, the rooms were amazingly cheap for Philadelphia. They were nice rooms when you got there, at the beginning of the day, at least. You know?
Yeah.
Now, you brought up Dennis Corluzzo earlier, and I remember for a while the whole ECW Corluzzo thing got, you know, pretty extreme. You know, you hear stories about Corluzzo, you know, calling the, you know, fire department, hey, these guys are filling up the building, you got to get over there and shut their show down, so on and so forth. Like, how bad did it get around those times? Like, you were there in the fire when, you know, Corluzzo and Paul were at their, you know, their worst. I've even heard stories of, like, people's tires being slashed. You know, maybe that's a little exaggerated, but, you know, how bad did it get for a while?
Like, I don't know. A lot of that would be kind of before I started going, because by the time I started going, Corluzzo shows were, like, pretty much, like, non-existent, barely happened, and not drawn. I think, like, after what they did with the NWA title in 94, that kind of really shut him down. Like, not shut him down, but put him in his place, you know, when they threw down the NWA title, and that was the ECW title, world title, and all that with Shane Douglas. And that was, like, 6 months or so before I started going. By the time I went, the Corluzzo shows were, like, jokes, you know.
Mike, you got anything?
Oh, no, I was going to say, just one more thing, but I guess because we have talk about some other stuff too, and, you know, we got plenty of ECW stories. I kind of want to talk about real quick, if, Tom, you were there for the night when there was that Mick Foley, Terry Funk incident that kind of put the big damper on things. When was this, back in 95, was it?
Yes. I was thinking about that today. Like, I was thinking about ECW Day, trying to jog my memory, you know, and just, like, go over different things. And that night, Cactus and Funk and the, I never liked when any wrestlers use fire, because, like, you really can't control it. But never using the Flame and Brandon Iron a lot at that point. That night they were doing a match. I don't even think it was Funk. It wasn't even Cactus and Funk even fighting each other. But I remember just like a couple weeks before that in IWA Japan, Cactus and Funk did a spot where they lit a chair on fire, or they wrapped a towel around it and poured gas or lighter fluid or whatever on it and lit it on fire. And that was like one of the hot tapes selling at the RF video table at the time. And sure enough, they tried that spot that night. And when Cactus lit the chair up and went after Funk, Funk got out of the ring, and Cactus was like, banged the chair off the ropes. But when he did it, the flaming towel that was on fire fell off the chair and right onto Terry Funk's back at ringside. Terry Funk just, you know, in human reaction, you know, stood up and pushed it off and went into the crowd. And at the exact same time this happened, ECW was planning an angle where right at the end there, the lights would go out, and when they came back on, Raven would have Tommy Dreamer hung from the ceiling of the ECW arena. And lo and behold, the lights went out right as Terry Funk was throwing that flaming towel into the crowd. And it just caused, like, it was like a crazy scene. The lights went out, places on, like, there was people on fire, fire extinguishers, everyone, just everybody panicking. And a really, really bad scene. But I guess Terry Funk got burned pretty bad, and I guess a couple fans got burned pretty bad. And I remember that night at the Travel Lodge, everyone thinking that was going to be the last show and that ECW was going to be put out of business. Really, it was, like, weird. It was, like, a somber night, but everyone was, like, thinking that was the end, you know? crazy that it just happened. They were going to shut the lights off, and it just all crazy.
And that never appeared on video. I think they, like...
Yeah, they never showed that on television, yeah. Which that would have been... I would have loved to have seen that on video. And it never... One of the biggest things with ECW, which always blew my mind at the time, is unlike, like, Ring of Honor and all the leagues now, they wouldn't put all their shows out on VHS. They only put the select good shows out, or the best shows, I should say. And instead of putting them all, and, like, when you would go there, like, their merchandise would be flying off the shelves, shirts, their VHS tapes. I remember, like, it would take them forever to get the shows out on video anyway. But I remember, like, if you wanted to get one of the new shows, like, as soon as you got in the door, you had to go right over to the table and try to grab it, or it was going to be sold out immediately. And God knows we're never going to get more copies. You know?
Yeah, take it as a lesson, kids. Don't take these DVDs for granted. You know. You know, seriously.
I know, right? You gotta go home.
Like Naylor and I have talked about it before. Like, people take, like, these new shows for granted so much. Like, why isn't this show out 3 hours after it happened? You know?
Yeah, like, ECW, man. I remember Three Way Dance. That was the first show we went to the ECW Arena live. I remember that took so long to come out on video. I remember Paulie was blaming Rob Feinstein, saying that they weren't making copies. Feinstein was blaming Paulie, saying he never got the tape, which that was probably a truth, knowing Paulie's history. It's just like forever and a day. It seemed like it was never going to come out. You know, and like the show happened in April, and like the VHS tape didn't come out to the end of the year.
Real quick question, because I know Mike said we got some more things.
Oh, no, I actually have another arena question when you're done with this one, too.
Okay, did you attend Burley Legal?
No. I actually was offered a free ticket and did not go, believe it or not. I got a real bad blood disease in late 96, and I was in the hospital for like months on end. And I just got out. I was recovering at that point, but I wasn't like in any physical shape to go to a wrestling show. So I actually had to turn down it. My buddy had an extra ticket, and he was offered to me for free, and I had to turn it down.
Did you watch it that night, though?
I watched it on pay-per-view, though. Our cable operator did have it. So,
yeah, you guys had requests. You guys had requests, because I had viewer's choice, and I think you guys were in Wilkes-Barre had a request. And request pay-per-view after Barry Legal.
Yeah, request pay-per-view had it, yes.
Yeah.
And we ordered it and watched it, and at the time I thought it was like the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
Now if you watch it, it doesn't hold up well at all, but at the time it was just like, that was the shit.
I think I watched that three-way dance about like 100 times back in the day, man.
Right?
Yeah, right? Or that Eliminators. Actually, if you probably go back and watch that opening tag with the Eliminators, that was a really good Eliminators. Basically like a squash match in a way. But
yeah, and Bubba Ray broke his foot like minutes into it and worked the whole match with a broken foot. And you're like, if you didn't know, you wouldn't even be able to tell.
Yeah. And I guess the other arena question that I guess – before Tom, you want to go in and whatever else you want to talk about. I want to talk about, I guess, the time Rey Mysterio came in, because Rey Mysterio is, you know, you kind of look back, you know, he's a Observer Hall of Famer now, and you look back, I mean, Rey Mysterio is, you know, and what now with, you know, Mystico coming in, kind of like the new wave of Mystico coming in, kind of getting ready for Rey Mysterio to leave. And Rey Mysterio, I mean, he first really came onto the scene, you know, here in the States, in ECW, at the ECW Arena. And I think he used to do, like, Polaroids for, like, $5, like, before the show or something like that. I remember, like, reading, you know, on when they would do, like, the show previews on the TV show. But what kind of memories do you have about Rey Mysterio when he debuted? And I guess also with Rey Mysterio, you have, you know, Juventud and, you know, Psychosis as well, and all those guys, you know, coming in around that time. What was that like?
Yeah, speaking of Mystico, I was just looking at his new mask right before we went on the air that he's going to, I guess, wear in WWE. It's pretty nice looking. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah.
But, Rey Mysterio, like, at the time I heard in the names, we didn't get Galavision or AAA or none of that at the time, so, like, I never seen none of the guys. I just remember Conan from, like, the couple of matches he did in WCW. But I remember that when they announced they're coming in the day, I remember when we got there and we were actually walking to Former Mills that we mentioned earlier, and I see this mask guy walking up the street coming at me, and he's like shorter than me, and I'm only 5'4", so I'm a short dude, you know? And here's this little guy, you know, like that I'm looking like right over his head. I'm like, that can't be one of the Mexican guys, is it? And I like I was whispering to the dude next to me. He's like, I don't know, and obviously it turned out to be Rey Mysterio. And, like, he just, like, walked right up the sidewalk with his mask and wrestling tights on, and nobody said a word to him. But being, like, barely 5 feet tall or whatever the heck he is, he's, like, really short.
Yeah, how old was he when he was – he was, like, 18, right?
He like, wasn't even 19? 21 yet. He was, like, 19 or 20.
Yeah.
Because I remember – because afterwards at the Travel Lodge – he was drinking. I remember finding out a short time later that he wasn't even 21. I remember, like, when I actually learned his age, I'm like, well, I remember he was drinking. Well, anyway, yeah, like, but that night, man, him and Psychosis, when they put that match on, their first match at ECW, that just like blew my mind. I never seen nothing like that before. It was just amazing. And like they did a spot where like Ray Ray dove into the crowd on Psychosis from the ring, which like back in 95, you really didn't see stuff like that. And they were just like so far ahead of the curve that it was like just amazing. And then when, and then Juventud came in and he was totally amazing at the time. Just really, really amazing and ahead of the curve for their time.
Yeah. I remember, I think it was like the Gangsta's Paradise match, because I remember watching the Gangsta's Paradise, like that, like little 30 second, like, you know, hype video that they would have for the VHS tape. And yeah. I think like Rey Mysterio would do
every
like,
week forever.
Yeah. And you know what? I still loved it because like they would show like Rey Mysterio doing like the Hurricanrana to someone like on the outside, and he would just bust out all these Hurricanranas from like all these different weird angles and stuff like that. And it's like,
yeah.
And it's like you fucking rarely even saw a Hurricanrana, let alone from the top to
yeah,
the
and
floor.
Yeah, he was like pulling them out from all over the place.
Yeah,
off
I
the
mean,
top
you basically
rope,
saw
off the stage, off this, off that. Yeah, he was.
And like, they didn't feel like, yeah.
They loved him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know of anyone that didn't love Ray Ray, you know?
And actually, like, with these guys coming
memories.
Yeah, and Tom, like, with these guys coming in, I guess similarly, what was it like? In, you know, in late, I think it was like around late 94 when Benoit and Eddie and Malenko came in as well.
See, they were already there. Well, actually, Eddie Guerrero debuted at Three Way Dance. The same, my first show there was like his first, my first show in Philly was his first night in. That was the first time I ever seen Eddie Guerrero. And like, that, he kicked my ass that night, man. That was him and he, I want to say he fought Too Cold Scorpio, I think, first day in. And amazing, amazing match. But, what I was there for is Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero, and Chris Benoit's last night in ECW when they signed with WCW for 90 days. And everyone figured they'd be back in 90 days. And like, Malenko fought Eddie Guerrero. I think it was 2 out of 3 falls match they had, their final match. Everyone knew they were leaving. And as a surprise, they brought in Chris Benoit that night unannounced, which was the first time I got to see. Actually, it wasn't the first time, I'm wrong. I've seen Benoit before that. But and Benoit was back that night. And that was actually the first night, somehow, like during the show, we found out like they were going back to a hotel afterwards, like all the wrestlers and whatnot, the party, because it was Malenko and Guerrero and Benoit's last night. And it wasn't a travel lodge. I can't even remember the hotel it was. But I remember going there that night and being mostly just wrestlers and a few fans. And Eddie Guerrero was like the nicest, nicest guy I've ever met in the business. Like he sat there and talked to me and my two buddies for like 2 hours and went all over his history at Art Bar and all in the details how Art Bar died and like literally had like tears in his eyes as he talked about it. You know, it was like, it was really cool to have like someone like Eddie Guerrero sit there and talk to you like you're one of his best friends or something. And that was his last night in ECW. I actually got to spend a few hours at the hotel, which was cool.
Was that the 2 out of 3 falls match? Or no? Or am I thinking of something else?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah,
I think it was 2 out of 3 falls.
Yeah, that's what I thought was their last match. I thought it was the 2 out of 3 falls.
Another show that was never put out on VHS.
Yeah, it's on, it was like on like one of their Pioneer DVDs when they released like that, those national VHS tapes back in the day, DVDs I think too, but yeah, they never put that full show out, and RF Video would never put out the arena shows, they would always put out all the other shows.
Yeah,
but
they cut some kind of deal to film the house shows and they would sell them, but yeah, I never understood like why they wouldn't put out all the arena shows, and at the time, they were like the hot thing that everybody wanted.
Yeah.
Because at that point in time, there wasn't like all these other indies or anything to get. It was just WWF and WCW, and like the ECW tapes were hot. I remember when I first got on the internet and I discovered the world of tape trading, and I had all these ECW masters, man. I was like, the shit, everybody wanted to do deals with me. You know? It was like I was trading gold, you know? Yeah.
So then, Tom Green.
Yes, sir. I did
Well, do we have time for one more arena question? Because I had one more, and then
if you had any other questions, man, go ahead and ask them away.
Well, I'm a big mark for the wacky fan stories, and I'm just wondering because it kind of ties into a question that somebody asked in the F4W board, and I'm hoping that maybe there's some wacky, ridiculous fans like of you meeting someone that's completely ridiculous somehow through the arena. Because I'm sure in that crowd there were a million characters that came through. Your favorite and your least favorite fans throughout the years at the arena.
There's guys like Stanley the Mooner that everybody knows that's been going to the shows forever and ever. It's like a bum, scumbag guy that stinks that comes to all the shows and tries to make a scene. But as far as like favorite and least favorite fans, I don't really have favorites or least favorites, but there were so many crazy fans that went to ECW and like they had the club ECW for the first two rows where you'd buy four tickets at a time for $100. For four straight shows, and then you'd be able to renew it. And so it was like the same people in the first two rows in the same seats every show at the arena, you know? So, like, that's why Mike Johnson's in the front row, and you had your hat guy and his brother and Dreads and Gary Walter from Smart Mark and Carolina Jim. And all them guys were all in the same seats every month, and which made it more like almost like, I don't want to say family, but like friends, you know, because you knew all the people around you. You seen them every third Saturday. But, there was lots of crazy, goofy people, you know, but nothing that jumps out at me that I can tell any stories about.
Now, like, a bunch of people, like, after ECW died, like, all of a sudden, everybody seemed to hate Hat Guy. Like, is he really, like, a jerk, or have you ever, like, met him, or, you know?
No, he actually worked for ECW. He actually would work one of the doors. They have a door for people with tickets and a door if you needed tickets. And he would actually take the tickets at the ticket door. And so that's how I guess he got his front row seat. So he actually worked for the promotion. I guess he helped set up and stuff beforehand. But I think it was more an act. He just got, you know, he loved to get into the shows. And, you know, like ECW crowd was weird because, like, they were smart. And they were smart to everything, yet they loved to get into it. And, like, almost, like, played a role in the crowd, you know, and just have a good time. And, like, nowadays, like, CZW crowd, you know, it's, like, just not like that. They're complete opposite where it's, like, they've seen everything and, like, nothing impresses them anymore and they shit on everything. And, like,
I mean, I think that's how it is for a lot of indies, man. I mean, remember going to those Evolve shows back in Rahway? You and I would be sitting there and we'd be sitting there and then it'd be silent, you know, half the time, you know what I mean? It'd be kind of depressing in a way.
Yeah, it's so much harder to get a reaction because, like, so much has been done, nothing, you know, it's not like it used to be.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So anyway, I think, you know, we you know, you guys are going to be friends forever, so I'm sure we're going to have you back on, you know, a bunch of times, so I'm sure we have plenty more opportunities to bring up ECW stories. I especially want to get into future shows like after ECW left and, you know, the transition into it becoming the CZW building and all the insanity that went on. Like some of it we mentioned earlier with XPW.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a lot of XPW stories.
3PW.
Yeah. Where else? 3PW. There's actually the story real quick, Tom. You know, just because it's in my head, you know, we might as well just talk about it while I remember instead of putting it away and possibly forgetting about it. But the night that, I think it was like the first show when it was of that new Feinstein Doug Gentry promotion that they ran in Boonton, and you got really drunk and you were like, you were like ringside. You're like, and if you watch it on DVD, it looks like you're like the man. You're like David Hart Smith's manager or something. I think it was him and Chris here on the main event. But what do you kind of remember about that show? And I guess more specifically, the Sumi Sakai Daisy Hayes.
Wait, is that the one where she fell off the stage?
Yes.
Like she did. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, fell off the stage. That was actually the second show where she fell off the stage.
Was so, it? Like, all right.
There was Pro Wrestling Elite. I think it was called Pro Wrestling Elite, I want to say. They were awesome shows. Like, what I loved about it is the building they ran was like this old school theater. And it reminded me of a dungeon because it had like all these back hallways through like
and like the walls were like made of like rock or something, you know? And you're like going through these back hallways, and it's like, it just reminded me like being in a dungeon or something. And it's like, they have people, like they had seats on the stage, and like the ring was on the stage, then they had all the regular theater seating. And like they would draw like 100 people, and this place would probably hold like a few thousand. And so it was like totally empty, but it was like a weird, weird atmosphere just being in that really, really old theater. But
They had all these wires just like hanging around everywhere.
Like when you come out the ring entrance, there's like all these wires hanging down, like from where the wrestlers would come out from the back. Like it's crazy. it looked pretty bad on tape too, actually. But I love going there. I thought it was the coolest thing. But Boonstown, New Jersey, that town.
Yeah, but Daisy Hayes though, what was that?
Yeah,
like,
she fought Sumi Sakai, and like they did a spot. I don't know how they messed it up, and like right in front of the stage, like the way the building was set up, you were actually, when you walked in the front door of the building, you were actually under the stage. And you would walk through these doors, and you would walk up an aisleway where you'd come out from in front of the stage, you know? And you'd walk up, and, like, all the theater seating would be there. So, like, the stage would actually have, like, this 20-foot drop, which would be down, like, in front where the doors are. And somehow, like, Daisy Hayes slipped off and put the 20-foot plunge down to the floor below and lived to tell about it. Scary moment. I thought she was...
We got to find that. Put that like in the like F4W board, like on a in the thread or something like that, because it's like it really is like one of the like craziest bumps, like no one probably even remembers.
Oh, it's on YouTube. That dude from CCW Fans, Words, I believe his name is. Yeah, the dude that like nobody knows who he is. He made like a Pro Wrestling Elite like little compilation of clips, one of them is Daisy Hayes falling off the stage.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Goodness. But yeah, I think with that, because, you know, like I said before, we're going to have Tom on plenty more times, and he's got plenty more stories, and we're going to laugh plentifully. I couldn't find a way to end that very well. But I believe you guys wanted to talk about the ROH show tomorrow night.
Yeah, not much buzz going on for this show, huh?
No, and part of it is the fact that I think they peaked with Final Battle. You know, they brought things so far to a forefront, and now they're coming back with what kind of holds up, especially with the WrestleMania weekend shows coming up, kind of like almost a B show in a way.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like their anniversary show. It's, you know, it should be pushed a lot harder than it seems.
This show needs a run.
Their streak, they have like a good streak going of like their buy rates for their IPVs going up with each show. And I got a feeling that that's going to get snapped tomorrow. I just don't feel on this one, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, come on, Mike. Is it doing it for you?
I bought it. I'll be watching. And I'm actually going to be watching this and going to be watching the UFC pay-per-view probably either after it or on Sunday or something like that, because nothing's really going on Sunday. So I figured I'll watch this. But, like, I certainly do not blame people if this show does not appear to be sexy on paper, because it I think besides the Briscoe and World's Greatest Tag Team match, there's no real match that like stands out to, I think, your average fan, you know what I mean, as something like, wow, I gotta see this.
Now, did either of you get to see the TV show with the 8-man tag with all the tag teams in it from Louisville? It was like the Briscoes and the World's Greatest Tag Team against the Kings of Wrestling and the All-In Express.
I just don't remember it already.
Yeah, I was gonna say I couldn't stand that match, because like it could have been a really, I understand you have to do angles to, you know, for the storylines and such, but they like Vince Russo specialed this bad boy. Like the teams couldn't get along, you had to do a coin flip to determine who was gonna get in there. You know, teams kept, you know, shoving each other, arguing back and forth. You couldn't really get going, and by the end of it, you're like, why should I watch either of these matches? Because you have to give people a certain amount of, you know, I don't want to use the term, you know, work rate, but, you know, a certain amount of, you know, good matches on TV in order to make them think, hey, if I buy the pay-per-view, it's going to be that much better, whereas the TV show was just everyone bickering like little girls.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I agree.
I actually think I think that the All Night Express are probably going to be stepping up tomorrow against the Kings of Wrestling. I mean, I know probably Hiro and Claudio, I mean, they make everybody look good, and you'd think that, you know, that they'd want to make Rhett Titus and Kenny King, who are always seem to be, you know, really trying to groom as, like, you know, like they're this homegrown tag team, I guess, from ROH, you know. So you'd think that they'd probably, they're probably going to put on a good show. And I think Roderick Strong, man, I've honestly, like, Roderick Strong really doesn't have bad matches. Like, I maybe there are some people who don't like Roderick Strong and will disagree with that, but I think Roderick Strong's awesome. And, you know, I think only adding this no holds barred street fight little stipulation to the match only kind of makes it, I guess, maybe more digestible for people to go and watch it, as opposed to it probably being like a regular match and having to sit through. At least, you know, you're kind of going to get your, you know, your crazy shit, you know, and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Roderick, you know, Roderick in that kind of a match, I think that'd be cool. You know, I mean, doing like maybe crazy backbreakers on a chairs or something, you know. So, who knows? What do you think, Tom Richards?
I'm looking at the lineup right now. It's like, it's going to be a good show. Like, nothing on here looks like it's going to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's going to be a bunch of good matches, but there's, like, no hot angles or anything going on right now that, like, really grab you, or there's anything that you're like, oh, I got to see this match.
I think it's
probably the world's greatest tag team in the Briscoes is something you're probably going to be really kick-ass to see.
Yeah, I'm thinking Ring of Honor, man. I'm thinking it's not going to be really kicking into gear until this Boston-New York doubleheader, you know what I mean? Because I think they're doing, like, a lot of stuff like that, and that'll probably eventually lead into your pay-per-views a few weeks later, you know? So it's kind of like you guys were saying. I mean, it's kind of like they're just kind of having this match. I mean, you know, I think Final Battle, I mean, they did such a great job with that, just in terms of just getting everyone to be so psyched. And, I mean, I think, like, right after you had that peak of, you know, that final match of the, you know, Generico and Cena after a year-long build and all that, and it's like you kind of have this kind of pay-per-view where, you know, it's really just a bunch of matches. Like, there's really no – you really don't have, like, any connection to it, so – who knows if it's going to do good, but I mean, it's not like the UFC pay per view is any better. I mean, on paper anyway, you know. But
come on, Johnny Fitch landed for 15 minutes. What?
Wait, what did you say, Tom?
I said Johnny Fitch. Oh, go ahead. This is so confusing.
Yeah, Tom, no, Richards, it is. Yes, Tom Richards.
I was going to say the same thing. The UFC lineup's not exactly setting the world on fire either.
No,
you know. Actually, it's like one of them shows. If I had to pay for it, I wouldn't watch it.
And it's weird too because like they're showing pretty much the entire event, like between on Facebook and on Ion Television, and it's like I kind of wish, you know, there were other undercards. I think I'd rather enjoy sitting through more than
some of these all things. The undercards. I like everything's getting on, right?
Yeah, right.
We'll see.
But yeah, Tom Green?
I was going to say that you guys don't want to see John Fitch land BJ Penn for 15 minutes. Like, because that's what's going to happen. But it's going to be awesome, and I'm going to laugh all the way to the bank because of a fantasy MMA league. But no, dude, I'm excited for that show because I'm like the world's only Dennis Seaver fan, and I hate George Slaughteropoulos. I don't know why. I look at the guy and I kind of want to kick him between the legs. But no, I want to see the Deceiver kick his face in, but it's not going to happen. I kind of want to.
It's like I hate Michael Bisping. I want to see anyone kick his ass. You know.
See, so I hope you never meet my fiance because that's like her favorite fighter, like undoubtedly. Like, and it's because he's hot. I guess he's hot. I want to see Jorge Rivera kind of punch him in the testicles a lot. But no, I was going to bring up, since Mike brought up the Generico steam thing, Generico has lost, like, all kinds of steam since that match. Like, he got his title shot in L.A. on a show that, like, in front of the convention fans, which is not a lot of actual Ring of Honor fans, so I heard people were kind of iffy on, you know, at least the crowd
hate
that
match. Yeah, that was questionable.
Yeah, and now he's wrestling Michael Elgin, who I make fun of him because I'm not a huge Mike Elgin fan, but even without that, he's still relatively new.
The thing that hurt Generico was they didn't want to show their hand on the Steen Generico booking for Final Battle, so they didn't have either one of them on the Louisville tapings that were going to air after the pay-per-view, so there wasn't really nothing they could do with Generico in the meantime, you know, since he wasn't on like 6 weeks of television after the pay-per-view to do anything with him, it kind of cooled him off a lot.
Yeah.
Like you said.
Well, at the very least, you know, they could have filmed matches with both guys, because that they've done that before with like the title holders, where they'll film matches both with and without the belts, and then just air the stuff, you know, whichever one's true after the tapings. And they could have filmed matches with
guys. Yeah, but if Steen was there, then Generico would have to be there with no mask on.
True, I wasn't thinking about that. I got out-tommed. Oh, goodness.
It's all good. It's all good. But Tom Green, I guess before we – because I kind of want to have a couple other things I want to talk to you guys about. Is there anything about the pay-per-view that you want to talk about, I guess, being in your around your neck of the woods, I guess, around
Chicago? I kind of feel bad because, like, this isn't that far, but I'm also very poor right now, so I'm not going to be making the drive to Chicago anytime
soon. Yeah, you know –
That building. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I'll even add just. I was actually for your wedding present. I was actually gonna buy you tickets early. Just like, go ahead and go to this pay-per-view. But I looked at the lineup. I'm like, I don't know if that's such a hot idea.
Maybe next time.
Yeah, right.
That building is awesome though. Like live, I think that's the building they did the pay-per-view where Aries did his like after Austin Aries came back from TNA and did the run-in. Like I've never seen a crowd in Chicago that rabid for friggin' anything. And Chicago's a hot crowd usually, and that's the one thing that's gonna benefit this show. Chicago's always a really good crowd. You know, whether or ECW back in the day at the Odeon or, you know, Ring of Honor.
Fucking Odeon, man. I think they sold a lot of tickets, too. The Odeon was great, man. Anarchy Rules 99. I'll never forget that building.
Dude, I was supposed to go to November to Remember 2000, and my ride ditched out, like, a week before, which I was so mad about because I was a big CW Anderson fan in fifth grade.
You missed the Steve Corino title win. That was when he won the title in that four-way, right?
Yeah, and I believe it was Kid Cash and C.W. Anderson in the undercard, and I still love that match.
Yeah.
Where C.W. did, like, a walk-up superplex deal where, like, he was on the second rope, and then he had Kid Cash off the top rope.
C.W. Anderson used to do a delayed vertical suplex, like, while standing on the middle rope, and I remember that blowing my mind. But
that's a dude that's gotten lost in the ashes of everything. Because that dude was awesome in, like, 2000 ECW. Remember him and Corino had some good matches, too.
What do you think of him, Tom Richards, C.W. Anderson?
I just seen a thing on him in the Observer. I think he's, like, 41 now or something I seen somewhere.
Yeah, he's like, old. Like
older than you would have thought. I guess he got a later start.
Yeah, like, I think he was in the Power Plant, because he did some time in the Power Plant WWE.
Hello?
Mike?
Yeah, Tom, could you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But, no, like, in the Power Plant, he did some time in the Power Plant, because I think Joey Styles used to even bring it up. Like, this guy was too good for the Power Plant. He actually knows how to wrestle, blah, 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 blah. But no, he was down there when he was, like, 26, 27, I think. You know, he did get a late start, but, No, I read somewhere become a cop. I don't know why he couldn't think of that. He's going to become a cop, and then, like, his foot died. Like, he can't, like, he's got that floppy foot syndrome that Scott Steiner has, I guess. So I guess he's going to try to get that taken care of. But he's still working every weekend. Like, I guess he's got the book.
Oh, yeah?
I guess he's got the book for some group in, like, the Carolinas that Dragon Gate's doing, like, a co-promotion with. So
I haven't seen his name in like forever.
Yeah, like I think he's working with Chris Hamrick a lot. That dude's been lost in everything, which is a shame, because he was awesome.
Hamrick.
Yeah. By the way, what does 10320 mean?
Oh no, that was when we had our little delay. By the way, when you were gonna edit it out on the.
Okay. Yeah. There's nothing that's being edited out. Forget that you heard that, folks.
Yeah.
Forget that you heard that.
Editing.
Yeah, there's no post-production. This is all live. Just because you downloaded it doesn't mean that it isn't happening as you're listening to it. But no, what else were you wanting to discuss before we went off the air?
I wanted to say, I'm sorry, Tom Richards, go ahead. I'll let you
How about Evolve running on a Tuesday night in New York City?
If it gets Shima Zion there, I'm all for it. Like,
he's there, eh?
Yeah, she was Zion and Jason Gorey and Facade, who Mike knows a lot better than I do since he still hasn't sent me those discs.
Oh, yeah, eventually. On the IWC.
I'm excited that they're giving some of them guys a shot because they all pretty much deserve it, you know? I was, like, pushing DJ Hyde to get Facade back at CZW. To hell with him. I'll take him.
I feel bad for you trying to shove DJ Hyde anywhere. He's a pretty big dude.
Right?
Which... And by the way, very interesting, John Davis is working as a singles on this show. I'm guessing Corey Chavis had, like, work or something, but I don't think I've ever seen that.
Who is that, Tom? Is that Rain Man?
Corey Chavis is Rain Man. John Davis is the other dude.
Okay. It's not Rain Man.
Yeah, he's the light chocolate of the two.
Nice.
That was so racist. But, no, Zack Sabre Jr. is on this show, too. I just saw the Ambition show, that shoot-style show that WXW did. Him and TJP was awesome on that show. I mean, and they were awesome at the arena last year, too.
Yeah, Zack Sabre Jr. was really good. He won me over big when they did their show in Philly.
Yeah, Zack Sabre Jr. was awesome.
To see him in April again.
And they also got that chick there, too, which I guess is, like, the most pushed entity in Evolve and Dragon Gate USA.
I guess she's porking Matt Hardy, too, while you're at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Did you see that?
It's interesting, because I was driving home from work the other day. Her wrestling radio show on some satellite radio, Matt Hardy was the guest on the show, which I guess we know how they got him on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, if either of you get a chance to go on the Evolve website, please go and look at the cutout job they did on Chima Zion's picture. Like they had to cut out like part of another picture and put it behind a Evolve backdrop. And his hair looks fantastic.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
He looks like a Carlito action figure. No, Evolve's coming up, and, you know, hopefully that's awesome. Is there anything else we're going to...
Yeah, I wanted to talk about real quick before we head out, just because I know Tom watches AEW, and I know other Tom watches AEW, and who am I referring to when I mention Tom and other Tom? But both of you watch AEW, basically, is what I'm trying to say. And I know Tom Richards, I think you just recently watched one of the recent shows, I guess, if you wanted to talk about that, because AEW really doesn't get a lot of talk on these, on the message boards.
Yeah, right now,
and stuff
AEW,
like
I'm at Tyler Black's last show, Fade to Black.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm at on them. Like, I have them up through the end of the year, but I'm just trying to catch up on them, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm, like, doing a summer run right now.
They always have
some good stuff on them.
I'm way behind, so any AEW talk's going to have to be like a year ago.
I just got through a show on Smart Mark with Raven versus Silas Young and Screech versus Mischief, and I think like Davey Richards.
Yeah, the show they just did like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we'll be discussing this off air, but there's a reason why Screech will never be back.
Ooh,
exactly. Which, by the way, since we brought it up on a previous show and he was on this Fade to Black show, I just want to remind everyone that Danny Duggan is my least favorite wrestler because he spells his name Duggan and mispronounces it. Just wanted to bring that up.
You know what? When I looked at the back of the DVD I just got, I read it as Danny Duggan. I guess it's now like embedded in my brain that that's his name now. Danny Duggan was on... I think he teamed with Zero Gravity like on one of these shows or something like that, and I really don't remember too much about him, old Danny Duggan.
There was a match with Zero Gravity and Trick Davis against Chuck Taylor, Johnny Gargano, and Danny Duggan. That might be
that's
match.
Probably it. Yeah, that's probably what it was, actually.
That AEW show, I saw the manager's match off of it. That building looks kind of cool, but they kind of did a... good job in one facet, but a bad job in another. They really decorated the entrance to look just like their other building, which kind of sucks for me because that building is like really small, whereas this building is like a lot bigger and a lot cooler looking. So I don't know why you'd want to decorate a cooler building to look like.
Yeah, I saw that. It's in a different place now. They used to run a show in Iowa, and Tom Richards knows what I'm talking about. It's a shitty building, man. It's like I don't want to say shitty because you can't even see it. It's basically pitch black.
You can't even see it.
It's like one. Don't ever buy the Davenport, Iowa AAW DVDs, everyone.
Funny story. I'm going to call him out on the air about this because I think it's funny. Is my buddy on Black Friday, see AAW is having a sale. They're selling their shows really cheap. So my buddy Joe bought like the newest AAW show, which at the time I forget what one it was. And the end of January came and he never got it, you know. So we had Mike email. Yeah, Mike on the air. He sent Danny Daniels an email saying that we never got the DVD, yada, yada, yada. And Danny Daniels wrote right back, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, like, whatever. You know, I forget if he said he already sent one or sent another one. Whatever. He's like, I'll make it up to you. I'll send you another copy, and I'll throw you in a free DVD for to make up for the mistake, you know? And, of course, he sent us one of the Iowa shows in the dark. Which I can just picture him having like this big stack of the show on DVD that he can't get rid of, you know? Just like giving them away for free.
I saw one of those shows, and yeah, it's completely unwatchable. I remember IPW tried to light their building like that because their building kind of looks awful with all the lights up. So they did a show where they tried – it was like back in 2006, so this complaint about their building has been going on forever. But they turned off all the lights and brought in like a lighting rig, and they blew out all the fuses. And it was literally like 5 seconds before Mike Quackenbush debuted. And I remember him running by us and yelling, I've never done a dark match before. And it was quite amusing. And then he mailed dead animals to a fan, and it's gotten all nuts from there. But no, by the way, Mike, have you seen the 1111 IPW show by Chaps?
I have it. I'm looking at it right now, and I bought it, but I have not watched it yet.
I was going to say, I hope you bought it so I can get a copy off of it.
That's why you got to come down next week, because I'm probably not going to be coming down to Wilkes-Barre until at least April. I don't know, so you got to come down here.
I was thinking of trying to get you to go to the Chikara show in Williamsport.
What is no? Is this on the same day though as that Chikara show in Williamsport? Or no? Am I thinking of? I don't know.
The same day as CZW.
Oh, that's right. I probably won't go to CZW. That's for sure. we'll see. Maybe I will go to that Williamsport show and talk about it right here on the Mike and Tom show. And speaking of Chikara, we're gonna have. I guess we could kind of let one cat out of the bag here. We're going to have Mr. Leonard Chikara himself coming on the show soon to talk King of Trios. They just announced Great Sasuke, Dick Togo. And, I know Tom Richards here. We've been talking about going to King of Trios. And I think after that announcement of Team Ichinoku Pro being announced, like we're pretty much definitely going after that. So,
That was a surprise when they announced them being here.
Yeah, because I'm not like a huge, you know, Michinoku Pro, I know like the history and I followed it for all these years, but like I at least know enough to respect these guys and know like what, you know, what legends they are. And like a guy like Dick Togo, I mean, you know, who knows how many times you're going to get a chance to see Dick Togo anymore if it's not 1998 Shotgun Saturday Night, you know, so.
I think he's retiring this year too, actually. This is like his last trip to the U.S., believe it or not. So this will be the last time you get to see him until he comes out of retirement, like all wrestlers do, you know.
They should bring in Bradshaw and Taka and have a 2-on-3 match like old times. But
they keep saying the band's coming to Williamsport.
Yeah, I wonder what that is. I'm actually intrigued, and I actually don't know what it is. I haven't been filled in on it yet, so I'm kind of interested in seeing what it is. I mean, I just saw like the new video today, what's going on, and I don't know. We'll see. They did put Gresham. I do want to talk about this real quick, and I know before we wrap the show here, I want to talk about real quick about putting a mask on John Gresham and Tom Green's thoughts about this transaction by Michael Quackenbush.
I don't really notice a difference, like, to be honest, like, because Gresham doesn't really use his face when he wrestles.
Oh, yeah, Gresham needs something, man. I'm kind of glad they put the mask on, to be honest with you, because Tom Richards, I mean, you know, you we've seen this guy live. I mean, you know, feet, you know, a couple feet away from us. And I mean, he's just like this short little black guy, you know? I mean, it's kind of like something to give him a little bit of a character, I guess. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. Grisham's really good, real solid, real fun worker. Yeah. You know? Yeah, Chikara, I don't know. Quackenbush likes to put mess on everybody. Whatever.
So it's kind of like Eyes Wide Shut in that regard. The orgy masks.
I have not seen Eyes Wide Shut.
It's the movie about Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman going to the orgies.
Yeah, that was Stanley Kubrick's last movie.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
I know that much, but not much else.
I think we're gonna wrap up from there because I think we said we're gonna do an hour. We're about around that mark, so. I think we're good for this week, but we're definitely going to have Tom Richards back on for another 20 episodes.
We'll get him on.
And
yeah, I had to beg for a year to get on once, and then I'm back in a week. It's pretty cool how that works out.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, we made a star out of you, man. So residuals, gotta pay him. But no, we're gonna have you on in the future. We're gonna have Leonard Chikarison talking, probably more than likely not Chikara, which I think will be a really cool.
Yeah, we got a lot of good. I'm sure there's a lot about Leonard Chikarison we will soon find out about.
Yeah, I wasn't saying talking about Chikara is a bad thing. I was just saying a little different.
Yeah, that's why I like talking about not usual things, people talk about. So
yeah, we got a couple other people lined up. I'm currently working on someone that I only think works 5 minutes from my apartment, but I've never talked to in my life, that I'm hoping we can get on in the next few weeks. So yeah, it'll be a good time. So with that, I think we're gonna sign out. So everyone say bye.
Bye.
An elephant never forgets, so my dick remembers everything. Green inside your wallet is that pussy open sesame. Running the game, fuck am I saying? Running the earth, give me a month. Told all you niggas I'm in it to win it, cause having an Emmy just wasn't enough. You get sloppy drunk, I say whiskey neat. My clique should be cancelled. Freaks and geeks.